Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Wicked weather is one of the defining characteristics of the North Coast. We all learn how to deal with it in one way or another, modifying our behaviors and methods of travel if we need to. We rely on well-prepared public officials to take care of our emergency systems and to prepare for hazardous challenges. The backbone of our communications has turned out to be ham radio operators. There have been a lot of changes in the world of hamdom since the hurricane of 2007, and today we'll learn more about these and upcoming opportunities for you to ham it up yourself for some very good reasons. My guests today are Don Hilgartner of Clatsop County Amateur Radio Emergency Services, Ken Lucky of Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Club, Hal Dennison of Seaside Tsunami Amateur Radio Society, Frank Wolf of Pacific County Amateur Radio Club, and our own KMUN engineer, Terry Wilson, who is also with Astoria Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT. So I have a studio full of hams here today. Welcome, all of you. Thank you so much for being here, Frank.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, and good to have you here, Don.
Good to see you, Donna. Always glad to be on the radio.
Yes, that would seem so. Absolutely. If you're a ham, you want to talk on the radio. And Hal?
Pleased to see you again, Donna, and nice to be able to be here.
You were my instructor in my class. That's
yes,
right. I took the ham class a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And very nice to see you here today, Ken.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
And Terry, you are always here, fortunately.
Yes, it seems that way, doesn't it?
That's true. You get those calls in the middle of the night about something at the station. Before we talk about the changes and what's going on in the world of ham radio and in the nation and of course, in the Columbia Pacific region, I'd like to know a little bit about each of you and why you're involved with ham radio. So we can start right off with Frank.
Thanks. I got involved in ham radio about 30 years ago, so I'm kind of new to the hobby. Been working with the county and emergency services with communications related activities for that time. And we've come a long way, I think, in the last 30 years, actually the last 10 years even, as far as organizing and the numbers of hams that have been involved, the profile of ham radio as far as pulling the chestnuts out of the fire when everything else goes away. 10 years ago, when the phone stopped working, everyone shrugged their shoulders and went about their business. And today, when the internet goes down and they can't Twitter and they can't email and they can't IM, everyone starts walking around looking like they, you know, looking death in the face or something. So communications have become ever more important to us, and therefore having a backup has also become very important. And I think in 2007 and since then, people have become very aware of that. We still get power outages. We still get phone outages and things up on the Washington side where I'm from. And ham radio still has a role, even for brief periods, more or less in normal times. I'm involved with the Pacific County Club up there. We're active training and licensing people. Also active with Amateur Radio Emergency Service in Washington, not just Pacific County, but I'm actually the District Emergency Coordinator for District 3, which is Pacific, Grays Harbor, Lewis, Thurston, and Mason counties. That's the kind of the bottom corner there of Washington. Washington State is very active in Amateur Radio Emergency Service. Right now, we're preparing for the Olympics up in B.C., and we've already had a couple of very large-scale exercises dealing with that. If you can imagine having all of the Olympics going on and then losing communications, believe me, we want to be ready to step in if that should happen.
Ham radio operators are doing this not just because they enjoy it as a hobby. It truly becomes something that is vitally important in case we have a communications problem. All right, and now we will hear from Don Hilgartner of Clatsop County Amateur Radio Emergency Services.
Good morning, and I'm Don Hilgartner. Amateur call is WA7TEM, and I've been a ham since about 1964, and I've been involved in emergency services since 1964, starting out with Civil Air Patrol out in Washington County, and moved here to Clatsop County about 20 years ago, working also with the American Red Cross and the Military Auxiliary Radio Service, which is amateur radio. We're supporting the military. And also during that time, I was a member of the 116th Air Control Squadron of the Oregon Air National Guard out of Camp Rialia. So my emergency services involvement dates way back, and I learned very early on that communications was one of the most important elements of it, and ham radio was one of the most flexible elements of it, in that the things that we learned as an amateur radio operator were things that could be used in an emergency. And so I have kept my involvement in it and will continue to be involved in it, as getting as many people prepared to handle an emergency is the best thing to do before an emergency, because those are the people you don't have to deal with during the emergency. Then you only have to deal with those people who weren't prepared.
Okay, good. And we actually have, for those of you listening to this program, we have some tips on how you can be prepared for an emergency, because emergencies will happen. And the first speaker today was Frank Wolf. He's with Pacific County Amateur Radio Club. And then we just heard from Don Hilgartner of Clatsop County, and now Hal Dennison of the Seaside Tsunami Amateur Radio Society.
Well, thank you, Donna, and good morning to everyone. My name is Hal, and I am WA7FIV, and my current residence is Seaside, member of the Seaside Tsunami Amateur Radio Society and the Cannon Beach Amateur Radio Society, also trustee for both of those clubs. I've been interested in ham radio since the 50s, when a friend of mine in grade school's father was a ham in Montana. And so when I joined the Army and was fortunate enough to get electronic school, I decided maybe this is the time to study for a ham radio license. So in right after dawn, probably sometime 65, I did obtain a ham radio license conditional class, and have been active in ham radio ever since. And I do want to mention a couple more items. There are four of us retired professional communications people sitting here on the radio to five, excuse me, I'm sorry. Only we're retired, you're not retired, Donna. And we've been, Don was in the Air Force, communications in the Air Force, some really technical stuff. Frank and Terry and myself, retired ship's radio officers, so we've been in some pretty good, pretty interesting situations. One of those is currently happening, and that's the earthquakes in Haiti. And there are frequencies that are being reserved for emergency operation by the hams trying to help in Haiti, and they are 7045, that's in the 40 meter band, 3720 in the 75 meter band. And there is chatter also on 14.235 megahertz in the 20-meter band. And I encourage everyone who's interested to come to our classes, and we will mention that in a few moments.
Yes, we'll talk about those upcoming classes in a little bit. So if you are interested in what's going on in Haiti, if you are interested in knowing what the ham radio operators know, and you want those frequencies, we will leave them here at the station, and you can call after the program and get them. Sure. Thank you so much, Hal. And now let us hear from Ken Lucky of Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Club.
Thank you, Donna. I'm a little different from the old timers here. I'm a little bit new timer as far as an actual ham goes. As a matter of fact, my class was taught by Hal here and a couple of other individuals in Seaside, not too long after the big storm of 2007. But to show you how easy it is to get your ham radio license, I went from not having the license to the extra class license, which is the highest level, within 2 months,
but
basically.
You're smart.
And I might mention that all these guys are extra class, which is the highest level that you can get. The technician level is a very easy one to get into, and when we talk about the classes, we'll talk about that. I got into it mainly because I could see a way for me to continue to help serve the public in an emergency, because I used to be a paramedic and a firefighter for 15 years, and the need to help people was kind of in my blood. And so by getting into a situation where, since I'm not necessarily as fit as I used to be. I can still do something to help out in emergencies and to continue to assist the public. It was a logical place to go, as well as being personally a very, very good way to be able to keep track of family members and stuff during emergencies.
Ken, did you have a perception about what ham radio operators were like, or what ham radio was like before, since you're the newest one here, before you got involved yourself?
I did have a perception, and it was an accurate one, because I had been interested in ham radio quite a number of years ago.
Oh.
And so I knew it wasn't a bunch of old men sitting in dark rooms tapping on keys anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of very advanced things, and a lot of things that people utilize in their daily lives today, ham radio operators actually innovated or expanded upon. The internet, the way that the packets are sent, a lot of that was primarily designed by early ham radio operators trying to send digital modes and that sort of thing. So a lot of the things that people communicate and do in their daily lives today were originated or at least improved upon by ham radio operators.
The transistor, for instance, was invented at Bell Labs by two hams.
Mm-hmm. And ham radios are small enough today that they can fit into your pocket.
They're not much bigger than a large cell phone.
That's exactly right. So now let's hear from Terry Wilson, engineer extraordinaire, and also with the Astoria Community Emergency Response Team. And you do a whole lot of other things, too, Terry.
Well, I belong to every club mentioned here except the new Cannon Beach thing, and I'll probably join that. I got started in electronics when I built my first receiver when I was living in Long Beach, Washington, when I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school. When I graduated from high school, I went into the Coast Guard, and I've been an electronics technician since 1954. That's scary, 54 years chasing electrons. And it was just a natural progression. I was Coast Guard, I was Navy, and I retired, as Hal said, out of the Merchant Marine. As a matter of fact, there's a ship that comes in here about every 2 months carrying Toyota. It's called the Overseas Joyce. I was the last radio officer on that ship because I installed my replacement. So why am I involved? Why not? Mm-hmm. To quote the Kennedys, mm-hmm. Why not?
Well, and age...
Besides, I'm retired, and I'm not a couch potato.
It keeps you involved and active, that's for sure. In fact, Frank, you mentioned a statistic I think people might be interested in about how many there are in the country and all of that. Would you tell us that, please?
This part of the country, the Pacific Northwest, is known for being very supportive of ham radio, partly because of our weather. I think we get to use the stuff a little more often than other places. There's a very important convention once a year in April up in Washington called Comm Academy, and we had Dennis Dura, who was the emergency manager for the ARRL, the overseeing national organization that runs amateur radio emergency service. He came down to speak to us, and he got up on the podium and said, I don't really feel like I'm qualified to speak here because... And he quoted the figure that ARES has something over 9,700 people registered nationwide. And of that, 1,500 of them are in Western Washington.
That's quite phenomenal, really. I mean, that's an incredible statistic. Let's talk about what that organization is, because if people want to go online and find out more about ham radio, they can obviously find out about the clubs here. But what the overarching organization, which you just mentioned, what is their website?
Ham radio operators are individually licensed by the FCC, but as in a lot of things, you can really do a lot more united than you can separately. The ARRL, that's the American Radio Relay League, which goes back to the earliest days of ham radio, is the national organization. They're out of Newington, Connecticut. Their website is ARRL.org. Pretty easy to find. It's a terrible website, and they have been promising to rebuild it. So if you get lost, come back in 6 months. It should be better. They sponsor many activities within amateur radio, and one of the activities is the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, which is just a way of organizing those hams who have an emergency service bent so that we can become very effective. And they're organized at the national level, what we call the section level, which is generally drawn along state lines, although in Washington there's an eastern and western Washington section. And then the district lines have... have been drawn along Homeland Security District lines just to be compatible with the people we serve. And then local lines, which in this context in the Pacific Northwest is generally counties, although there are entities that are not counties. We have several cities that have their own ARES groups. And in other parts of the country, they're drawn on other lines, kind of make the local thing a bite-sized piece that's easy to manage. So if there's a nice organization, it is national. During Hurricane Katrina, we did move a lot of people down to Katrina to help. And in a regional situation, we can do that.
And I want to ask you, after we do a little station ID here, about, because we keep focusing on ham radio and emergency communications, there are a lot of other things you do when you have a ham radio as well, obviously, so we'll maybe mention that too. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and we're talking about ham radio, and we are just getting ready to talk about some of the changes that have taken place in the world of ham radio following the huge storm we called the hurricane of 2007 here on the North Coast. And my guests today are Don Hilgartner. He is with Clatsop County Amateur Radio Emergency Services. Ken Lucky of Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Club. Hal Dennison of Seaside Tsunami Amateur Radio Society. Frank Wolf of Pacific County Amateur Radio Club. And Terry Wilson of KMUN and Astoria Community Emergency Response Team. Before we talk about the changes, just briefly, let's just say, everyone thinks now, and everyone's grateful to the hams. They're being recognized. Thank you so much for all of the help. And now in Haiti, I know that they are very important there. It's not just emergency services. What are some of the other reasons that people become ham radio operators?
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I know that with the internet and cell phones, people think, well, gee, you know, I don't need a ham license. I can talk to any place in the world. But that capability of being literally able to talk to any place in the world from a small unit, either a handheld radio or in your car, is just something that you can't really catch on the internet and with a cell phone. And the fact that you never know who it is that you're going to talk to when you talk to someone on ham radio. We have members of our local clubs who've talked to astronauts on board the International Space Station. Terry Wilson is one. Terry, just a few weeks ago, talked to the ham radio station on board the USS Midway down in San Diego.
The aircraft carrier.
Ken Lucky, I know, talked to the USS Midway also. At that time, both of them were using handheld radios that are about the size of a pack of cigarettes. And that type of adventure, where you might talk to a person on the radio that you have never know anything about until you get them talking, and all of a sudden you find out that you're talking to an astronomer at the Palomar Observatory, or you're talking to a railroad engineer running a train back in the Midwest, or various types of communications with people that you never would have imagined otherwise.
So it really enriches and enlarges your world.
Our club president of the Sunset Empire Amateur Radio Club just recently was making a contact with somebody back in the Midwest, and he got chatting with him and mentioned his our club president's father's call sign. And the gentleman he was talking to said, just a minute, I recognize that call sign. And he went and looked through his log files back a large number of years ago and said, I've talked to your father. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a small world, and there are all sorts of stories like that.
3 degrees of separation. Okay, Terry.
Well, I've got one of my favorite stories is when I first became a ham around 1968, when I talked to King Hussein of Jordan, Barry Goldwater, mm-hmm. and General Curtis LeMay of SAC. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know who they were because we never use our last names.
And I've got one.
Yeah.
Father Moran in Tibet, whose station was being powered by a bicycle generator. I spoke to him in the late 60s. And I mean, it's
great
just
stories.
Cool.
Well, great when
stories.
I was on the Sacramento, I talked to Arthur uh-huh. C. Clark.
Yeah. All right, now we could go off on all these reminiscences.
Yeah, don't get started.
I've got five hams in the studio here today. So okay, now how about
six?
All right, six hams, six hams.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm a ham.
I'm not as active as I need to be, but mm-hmm. okay, that is changing. So all right, let's talk about these changes, because Terry said that there are changes that have happened that the public would like to know about. And so let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll give some tips on how you can be prepared for emergencies.
Ken, you want to go first?
Well, The hobby, as it's called, although it's much more than just a hobby, is constantly changing. We're on the forefront of technology. As a matter of fact, one of our favorite sayings is ham radio in the 21st century, because we are always pushing the envelope of what we can do. Right now, we can, without the internet, we can send email-style messages and pictures over the ham radio from one point to another. As a matter of fact, that's how the declaration of emergency was declared during the 2007 storm. It was sent, I believe, from Clatsop County, and it ended up down in Texas and then back to Salem. Mm-hmm. To have our county, Clatsop County, actually declared an emergency. That's called packet radio. It's digital mode communication, just like the internet, over ham radio. You can send pictures, you can send live video, as a matter of fact, over ham radio. It's always evolving, and something new is always coming up.
There are also, speaking about some of the new technology, you can send packets through satellites. And you can also talk via voice through a satellite, talk to somebody on the other side of the world with a little 5-watt handheld radio. I think that just totally phenomenal, and it's a part of what our science is and what our hobby is.
And we have our own satellites up there.
Yes. I'm a member of
AMSAT.
Yeah, AMSAT. And that's what we do.
And as Ken and Hal pointed out, we're always on the leading edge of the technology. Many of the inventions, so to speak, of electronics have been invented and operated by ham radio operators. But we're still continuing to push that. As Ken said, we've got the video, the email communications. I was able to actually sit at my house just outside of Astoria in the Lewis and Clark area, watching real-time video come in from Katrina via the shortwave radio that was being sent back to Maryland, back to FEMA headquarters. And again, this is all via amateur radio. So even if the local cell phone system or the statewide internet goes down, we can reach out above and beyond borders in order to provide that type of communications.
You all are the first to know about things that are happening. And Frank?
One of the interesting things I like to look at about ham radio is the regulatory structure. Almost every other radio service has a very short list of things that you can do with it. If you've got a fire radio service for the fire department, they have a very short list. They can use it for dispatching, fire ground activities, and not much more. And that's pretty much true of every kind of radio service except the amateur radio service. We also have a short list, but it's a list of things we cannot do with the radio. If what we want to do, if what we think of as a wild hair idea isn't on that list, we're free to go ahead and try it. If the FCC doesn't like it, they'll put it on the list. This has sort of happened in the past. But essentially, in a broad brush stroke, with the exception of broadcasting music, which we cannot do, you can do almost anything else with ham radio that anybody can do with radio. And there are things that are done on ham radio that you can't do on any other radio service.
That's really good to know. Thank you about that, Frank. Terry, is there anything else you want people to know about things that are changing or have changed because of the weather before we go into how can people be better prepared for emergencies?
Hal mentioned when the Clatsop County asked for a declaration of emergency help during the 2007 storm. And correct me if I'm wrong, Don.
Yeah.
It was only after the governor got that he was able to activate the National Guard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
That's correct. It was after he received that, and we received the confirmation that he approved it, that we were able to activate all of the national, federal, and state resources.
That's the only way we could have gotten that request to the governor.
That's correct.
To get us help.
And as a result of that particular operation and one of the governor's representatives being there, when that message came in from Clatsop County, the state of Oregon recognized the importance of amateur radio and set up a package which was put into each county emergency operations center, similar to what Clatsop County had operational during the December 2007 storm.
A lot of people have gotten their ham radio licenses as a result of this, and there are businesses and organizations which are saying, you know, we need to have somebody who knows about ham radio that be prepared. What can the public do? You talked a little bit about this 72-hour list.
The 72-hour list is, you'll see several of them around. The Red Cross has a very good one. You'll find them on the internet. It's a 72-hour list of items that you should have on hand for an emergency in case everything goes out. And you folks all do have your 72-hour packs out there, don't you? But one of the things that they fail to mention and that we think is a good idea is that you find your nearest ham radio operator and put their name and how to contact them physically on that list so that when your power goes out, you can go to that ham radio operator and say, I need to get a message to my grandmother in Florida and tell her I'm okay, or something like that.
Okay.
Even more important, during 2007, we had our power out, we had trees down all over the roads, and we had lost most of our phone service, which means you couldn't dial 911. We're so used to being able to pick up the phone and call 911 if we have a medical emergency. Well, what if we have a medical emergency and there's no phones, but you have a ham that lives two blocks down? If you know that, you can send someone to the ham radio operator who can get word to the county to dispatch someone, if it's available, to come with your medical help you with your medical emergency.
Then how do people find out where hams are living so that they know who's close to them?
They can go to the FCC website. There's a database that you can put in by zip code. You can go to one of the clubs. They can tell you who's close to you. Just ask around, look for the big antenna on the house if you see one.
Police and fire departments will know where we are because we're on their lists of people to call and contact.
Right.
Same thing with the CERT organization and the American Red Cross have listings of hams, but they can find those out on the websites, plus the websites of the various clubs.
Okay, so in advance, don't wait until there's no internet, there's no power
contact
or anything.
Now.
No,
right.
Make your 72-hour list, which means all of the things. I mean, you can go online and you can find this list of things that you need to survive for 72 hours. And on that list, which you have printed out in your home, and your office, wherever you are going to be in your car, you also have the name and the address of the nearest ham radio operator. That sounds really wise. We only have another minute or two left.
How do people become hams?
Well, all right. How do people become hams? How about the classes?
Okay, well, I'll start, I guess, January 15th and 16th. That's this Friday and Saturday at the Community College in Seaside is a technician class. Also, March 19th and 20th, August 20th and 21st, October 15th and 16th. And a general class, if you already have a technician, a general class will be held 29, 30, and 31st in Seaside.
So if you don't have a ham radio license and you want to get one, you can do, I did this a couple of years ago. You can take the technician, which is the basic class. That's where you learn, and I highly recommend that you take a class.
Sunset Empire also has one coming up in 2 weeks, the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. It's a little bit more of an expanded class. And then also on the 6th of January, we're holding what's called a refresher class for technicians who want to go back through but don't need to be licensed, want to learn a little bit more.
6th of February.
Yes. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Pacific County has just finished up a bunch of classes, and we'll be having classes soon, too. The best way to look at the best thing to do is look at our website, which is www.qsl.net/ W7RDR, and that'll be available here at the station.
And if you
it.
Didn't get that, don't worry. Terry Wilson's going to be here. Call the station, and Terry will tell you how to do this. Anything else? Nope. Take a class. Learn to be a ham radio operator. Thank you so much for all the good work that you all are doing for our community and all the ham radio operators all over the world who just do a very valuable service, a hobby they love, and also things people do. Okie doke, Terry's saying, we got to go. Thanks, Terry Wilson, and talented banjo instructor Michael Brunn for the original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath with gratitude for all the good things in your life. Take a little deeper breath than I just did, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.